Stay up to date on the green and gold all off season. The Green and Gold Fix podcast is brought to you by Potawatomi Casino Hotel. Luxury stay, elite play, unwind in sophisticated comfort. Win big, dine, and experience the events in Milwaukee.
A weekly pulse on all things green and gold with the three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, Jason Wilde. I'm ESPN Wisconsin's Alex Groff with you to unpack all things Brian Gutekunst and what's to come here in the offseason. We'll also talk a little bit about the Super Bowl because both general managers have some Green Bay ties. Premont Trey, Abbott Penning School connections to the Green Bay area. So we will get into all of that. Hello, Jason. Happy Super Bowl week.
Hi, Alex. Great to be with you today.
Does it feel like Super Bowl week to you?
I don't know. If the Packers aren't in it, it never feels like Super Bowl week to me.
Well, it's been a while then since it's felt like Super Bowl week.
Yeah, about 15 years. I mean, unless I'm there interviewing people, like I'm working on this story for Sunday about Ron Wolf and his son and his protege, who are both got their teams there. And so I guess that part of it, but like Seahawks, Patriots, had the Bills made it and have a chance to finally win a Super Bowl, I think I'd be more interested, right? Had the Bears made it, I would have been like, God, I really hope Ben Johnson doesn't win a Super Bowl because he's a dink. So I don't know. But this, I'm just, it's Thursday.
Fair enough. When you talk to Ron Wolf, does he just exude pride in these two guys?
He does. And look, I was scared to death of him when I first started out.
Oh, but, really?
You know, he and I, in the early 2000s, before Paula came along, my girlfriend lived in Maryland, and I would go, to make a long distance relationship work, I would travel there frequently. And Ron had retired to Maryland, so every time I was in town, we would go out to dinner. And I remember this college kid who sometimes was home from school at the University of Miami that would come to dinner with us, and his name was Elliot. And now he's, 43 or whatever he is, and he's got his team in the Super Bowl. So, yeah, I love Ron. He's 89 years old and as sharp as can be. It's just I'm excited to write the story, and I have to figure out a way to transfer a recorded phone call on my iPhone into audio that we could use on the show, because I'd like to do that because he was great. And I just, and one, my favorite moment was when he said, "Hey, we have to stop this for a second." I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, this alarm is going to go off that says I have to take a pill." And he said, "Someday you're going to get to this point, Jason. Like your life is going to be run by an alarm telling you you have to take your pill." But like, perfect example. Like he's 89 years old. He's met Paula a couple times. And the first thing he asks is, "How's Paula doing?" Like, I just think the world of the guy. And I would argue that while we talk about Favre, when we talk about Reggie and Mike Holmgren, I mean, we're talking about a guy who was instrumental in all that. And what we have today would not have happened if Bob Harlan hadn't been smart enough to hire him and if he hadn't done everything that he did.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I guess like people of my generation, Jason, right? Because I'm 27. I really remember the first Packers games I remember, he wasn't even the GM anymore.
Right.
So everything I know about him, I know through reading and hearing from you the stories of what, turned the Packers around and ultimately made them the great franchise I've grown up rooting for.
Yeah.
But I really don't remember the Ron Wolf era at all because I was born in the back half of it. So just fascinating to see, but also seeing his legacy live on through Seattle, through Green Bay, now through New England, obviously, and his son and Elliot Wolf, who's the architect of this turnaround for the Patriots. Pretty unbelievable to see his fingerprints all over this Super Bowl.
And to segue into Goody, he was always honest. Like bluntly honest. And maybe that's a bygone era. And I was talking about this with Chewy this morning on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. But like the takeaway from yesterday with Goody, who, by the way, got the job over Elliott, and John Schneider was interested in it, but he did not have an out clause in his contract anymore to leave for Green Bay. But like to listen to Goody, everything's great except they can't finish games. Right? Like everything is hunky dory. We just have to finish games. We just have to finish games. And injuries played no factor. I mean, I would go into my conversations with Ron nervous about asking the right questions, but always knowing that if I did ask the right questions, I was going to get the unvarnished truth. I walked out yesterday of the fourth floor room where we did this because the media auditorium has been demolished for expanded equipment room usage, thinking, the heck am I going to write? I mean, they lost five in a row to end the season. They lost in the playoffs in the first round, and everything's hunky-dory, other than we got to finish games. Like, even I even asked the question specifically about what he needs to do better, and he made it a general answer about the team. And I said, no, I was talking about you personally, which I was I don't know. Well, there's plenty to unpack there that we don't have time for, but the fact of the matter is that I don't know if I have any better answers for fans than I had before I went in there.
Yeah, and that was kind of the theme, it seemed, from yesterday's press conference, Wednesday's press conference with the Packers general manager Brian Gutekunst at Lambeau Field. It's the first time we've heard from him since the Packers traded for Micah Parsons, right? He didn't do a bye week. He didn't do an end of regular season press conference. The last time we heard from him was all about that trade. And yeah. Now it's, okay, you got a contract extension, which we have no more information on other than he's excited and honored to get the contract extension. We don't know the length. We know nothing of that, though he was asked about it. He does this every year, though, Jason, where it's if you ask him about a player that's under contract, he's not going to tell you his plan for them. And frankly, it's February. It was February 4th when he talked, February 5th when you and I were talking. Maybe he doesn't have the exact answer on the decision with Elgton Jenkins or Rashawn Gary or Aaron Banks. But the Aaron Jones thing comes to mind every time with him from a couple years back where Aaron Jones is coming off the best five-game stretch of his career, and he says, yeah, we'd love to have him back. And then a month later, he signs Josh Jacobs and releases Jones. So I just don't really know what to make of yesterday. He seemed like he was impressed with everybody's contributions from a player standpoint. I don't know. I don't know that we really have answers.
Yeah, and it was I'm calling up my old Madison.com story now. He said the word absolutely when it came to Aaron Jones. So when and you're right, I flashed back to almost immediately that moment about Aaron Jones when somebody asked about Josh Jacobs and he said, look, well, this is a guy that we need on our team. Like he's a great teammate and everything he said, right, about Josh Jacobs on Wednesday. He could have just put Aaron Jones's name in. He just avoided the word absolutely.
Yeah. Well, he didn't. So I noticed he likes to say very, very a lot. So he said they played at a very, very high level, championship football type level, but not consistently enough. He said Keyshawn Nixon had a very, very good season at cornerback. I don't know. And look, I when it comes to the late game collapses or the lack of finishing games, I don't know how much the general manager can give us insight into that, right? That's more a coaching issue to me than it is a GM issue. But I just felt like a lot of his answers were insincere or vague or very coach speaky or GM speaky in this case. Is that just what we've come to learn about him?
No, you could not be more right. I mean, look, I get it. Chewy was really frustrated about this because you know, again, he's old school. And if a guy played poorly, there were things said about him publicly. And, you know, his question was, are today's players too sensitive that nobody wants to say that kind of stuff? And my point was, you can say things in a certain way. You know, Rashawn Gary didn't have a sack or a tackle for loss in the final 10 games. Like, there's no, I don't know how else you spin that. But to be honest about it, you could just say, look, Rashawn Gary, we believe, is one of the best players on our football team. He was voted as a captain. Like, we needed more from him. And you know who would tell you we needed more from him? Rashawn Gary. Now, the truth of the matter is, if Goody said what I just said, it's not really true, because Rashawn Gary thought he had a great season, which, again, I don't know if that's delusion or what. And look, I think he probably played better than he's getting credit for. Like,
maybe.
In terms of, like, you know, what he did that doesn't necessarily provide statistical analysis of it. But the bottom line is, it's a production-based business. And yeah, he had some pressures, but, like, you can't go 10 games without a sack if you're a pass rusher.
Or a TFL, right? Like,
right.
Even if you go 10 games without a sack, fine. Give me a TFL. Give me something. And then the other part of it is, and this is where I get frustrated, and I know a lot of fans are with me on this, Jason, is you can view and see effort on television, right? Even if I'm not at the games, if I'm not in the press box, if I'm not an expert, I'm a fan, right? But when I'm watching a game and I'm watching Rashawn Gary clearly give up on chasing a quarterback or a running back,
sure looked like it.
You can see effort. And it felt like there were many plays in that 10-game stretch where Gary just gave up prematurely. And that's frustrating. And that's where I think fans, you know, their frustration or anger toward 52 is elevated, because you can see that come through the TV screen.
Well, and look, I'm going to give Goody the benefit of the doubt in terms of, you know, choosing his words carefully. Right. I don't expect him to get up there and say, yeah, we're going to move on from Elton.
Right.
And we're going to move on from Rashawn. We thank them for their service. I don't expect that. But again, like, if I was a Packers fan and I had sat and watched that, and I know that some frustration would be then directed at reporters, but I thought we asked the questions that needed to be asked. And what do I always say? It's about the answers. And those questions did not yield the kind of answers that Packers fans want to hear. Like, how many times have I told you that Rich Bisaccia is viewed as critical to the culture in that building?
Many times.
And what was it? The fourth word out of Goody's mouth on the question about Rich Bisaccia? The word was culture?
Yes, it was.
So, like, you know, I do know what's going on there a little bit, but that didn't make you feel any better. He actually said that the special teams have improved significantly.
Which is incorrect via every metric.
And I've talked about this before. Like, I'm not great. I need an opening of a pause where no one is talking to ask my questions. Like, I don't. And I saw somebody pointed this out on Twitter. Now, Goody has now taken a page from Matt LaFleur's book. It drinks his water while my question is being asked.
Yeah.
Which is great, because I felt pretty good about my questions yesterday, and not all of them were long. But if I had followed up on that, I would have said, well, what about the return game on special teams? You took two wide receivers in the draft, first and third round. You decided you were going to have them involved in the return game. Matthew Golden had never returned a punt in his life.
Yep.
Not in peewees, not in high school, not in college. First time he returned a punt was in the NFL. And Savion Williams, who I've mentioned this to others, you know, was advertised as the next Cordarrelle Patterson, had only returned a handful of kickoffs as a freshman at TCU, and then that was it for him on returns.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how you end up with Bo Melton, who nobody loves Bo Melton more than me, but he's not like a big bruising return guy, and you have to be able to run through some big time tackles to be successful as a kickoff returner. And that's how you end up with Romeo Doubs with his oversized protective helmet trying to return punts. I mean, you're just that wasn't good enough. And you have to be able to say, we have to figure out how to be more dangerous with our return game. He's right. Their punt coverage and their kickoff coverage is improved, right? They didn't really let any out of the gate on either of those this season. Their punter is really good. Their kicker, you know, wetted the bed in the playoff game. But, like, you know, he said he'd made 32 kicks in a row. I assume that is field goal attempts and extra points because he certainly missed his fair share earlier in the year. But he didn't do it when the money was on the table. That's 2 years in a row where he's missed a playoff kick that they couldn't really afford for him to miss. And he missed three kicks in that game. You have no return game. None. Bupkis, zero. So that's a big glaring error or a big glaring hole in your special teams argument. But again, I don't think Rich Bisaccia is as bad as fans think. He's a little bit like an easy target for them to voice their frustration about.
Yeah.
I do think he's a good coach. And but the one thing that he said about special teams that stuck out was that he felt like he had put a bunch of guys on the roster that were really special teams only guys. And he had that line about how Ted Thompson, even though he was a special teams player for 10 years, never wanted any guys that were just special teams players. And I guess in fairness, Bo Melton, Zane Anderson, Aaron Mosby, Christian Welch, Nick Demon, I guess he did have guys.
Dallin Leavitt comes to mind.
All those guys were hurt by the end of the season.
That's true. Well, I guess I was going under his tenure in full, right? Especially when Bisaccia came over, because Nixon kind of fell into that category too at the beginning.
He did.
Before he became a crucial cornerback piece. But I
number one corner.
We'll get to the Pro Bowler at some point. I was really intrigued by that line. That we've had more investment, and he said more than once, I think, our special teams has improved. But you look at every statistic that measures every level of special teams, right? Whether it's EPA, and I know you don't love DVOA and all those other stats, but over the course of the last 4 or 5 years, the Packers ranked dead last in the NFL. In Matt LaFleur's tenure in full since 2019, the Packers are last in every one of those categories in special teams overall. So maybe Bisaccia is a scapegoat, but he was brought in to be the solution, and he certainly hasn't been that. So I think that's why the frustration is pointed his direction. But clearly he will be back, as will, it seems, most of the staff. It seems now that we're this far into the offseason, unless Clint Kubiak goes to the Raiders, which it sounds like he will, and Stanovich gets the Seahawks job, I would imagine they'll just promote internally after making a Super Bowl appearance. That's going to be it for changes. Matt LaFleur fired zero people this offseason, unless we still have to hear something. It's something I've asked you about every week. Does that surprise you that that's the likely outcome now?
It doesn't. But again, I hate this conversation. No offense to you, of course. But like, I don't want to be the guy sitting up here going, yeah, they need to fire people.
It's not even that, Jason.
But you're right. No, but here's the thing. Like, I have said, I mean, this is my version of they have to fire people, is Matt LaFleur is loyal to a fault, right? And I think that's true. And I have nothing against Luke Butkus. Absolutely nothing. But the way their offensive line played, and if you're looking at how players develop, I don't know how good you feel about the development of some of their young players, right? Like, to what degree have those guys gotten better? Jordan Morgan, chief among them. Now, in fairness, Jordan Morgan, he's been at every position except like tight end. So it's a tough deal, right? But I guess my, you know, the Eagles' longtime offensive line coach parted ways. Like, does Matt LaFleur have it in him? And again, I wouldn't. Let's be very clear. I would suck at firing people because I don't want to do that. That would not be – I don't want to ever be in a managerial position, ever. But does he have it within him to say, all right, we're moving on, and we're gonna go get this guy from the Eagles who has an unbelievable track record, right? Does he have that? I don't know if he does or doesn't. And I'm not advocating for somebody to lose their job, but that guy sounds like a guy that you might want on your roster, on your staff.
Yeah. It's a fair point. I guess just back to my original question slash point, though, Jason. He's loyal to a fault. And the other thing you've said a lot this offseason since the season ended about a month ago is fresh ideas would certainly help. Now, he gets some defensively, but that's because Halfley left, not because Halfley was fired. Offensively, it looks like we're just running this thing back, with exception to, I guess, Nathaniel Hackett, who is technically a defensive analyst, but obviously has the offensive background, who joins LaFleur's brother in Arizona as his offensive coordinator now, as the news came out earlier this week. I'm just surprised nothing's changing by choice. After you lose two more games, or I guess you win two less games than you did a year ago. You're the seventh seed for a third straight year. You lose in the wild card round for a second straight year. It doesn't feel like they're on an incline, despite that's where you hope they're trending with a youngish quarterback and a young roster.
Right, which is why I kind of lost my crap a little bit with Goody with my question. And I don't know if anybody cut this. I may have to do it. But where I said, why can't you just say, yeah, we got screwed by injuries. We lost our two best players, and we had a pretty damn good football team. And if we hadn't lost them, we'd be having a different conversation. Because that, to me, that's the reality. Like, is there some sort of rule against being able to say that? And I'm so tired of the 2010 comp. It's just not the same. They didn't lose Clay Matthews or Charles Woodson, which would be the equivalent of what they lost in Micah Parsons. And as good as J. Mike was, he wasn't the complete player, and they certainly didn't build their offense around him completely. And they lost him early in the year, so they had more time to adjust than losing Tucker Kraft coming off his best game of his career. Those guys, they are not sitting home. I don't know if they're in the Super Bowl or not, but they're not losing to the Bears twice. Rashawn Gary could not corral Caleb Williams. You telling me that you really don't think? Remember, they didn't have Parsons for either of those Bears games
right.
The end of the year. You're telling me he doesn't enter Sandman that guy's ass at some point in the game there, right? Yeah. Like the fourth down play, that is the critical play in the playoff game. You don't think that Micah Parsons might have affected the outcome of that play? Like, they don't have a lot of stars on this team, and they lost two.
Yeah,
the two brightest ones, I would argue.
Yeah, the two brightest aside from Love, right?
So if you're going to argue that everything's hunky-dory, and we're, you know, other than not closing out games, but then you won't acknowledge that, look, we believe we had a Super Bowl team if those guys were healthy. Just, again, it's like that old concussion movie with Will Smith. Yeah. Tell the truth.
The one argument I always make is there's other holes, but that's neither here nor there. Hey, we have a little bit of another piece of news as we're talking about the coaching staff. They will have another offensive hole to fill as Sean Mannion, the quarterback's coach, gets promoted. Well, not promoted, but takes the offensive coordinator job in Philly. I don't think you've seen this yet because it just came out for me in Rappaport. They have snagged somebody else. Ryan Mahaffey, who's been the wide receivers coach each of the last 2 years in Green Bay, will join Mannion's staff in Philadelphia as the run game coordinator and tight ends coach. So the Packers now looking for a QB coach and a wide receiver coach. But I would imagine Luke Getsy probably has a pretty good chance for that QB coach job.
Yeah, or wide receivers coach.
Yeah.
Like he can have the senior offensive assistant slash and then give him a position. But yeah, that's didn't take Luke Butkus with him, though.
At least not yet. Maybe he will.
Indeed. Not yet. Indeed.
Maybe he will. All right. A couple final thoughts. This will be our second to last episode of season two of Weekly Wildy. We'll go to monthly Wildy. We'll do a free agency special. We'll do a draft special from here on out. So do want to say I'm going to put a video at the beginning of this YouTube version, but drop your comments. We'll do a little mailbag edition for the final episode of season two. Just a reminder, if you have any questions as we enter the offseason for Jason. I've seen a graphic that's been circulating now on Wildy and Tausch, and it's something we talked about a little bit on Sunday Karma, but it's something you and I are in lockstep on because we always are, Jason. The three positions that really stick out to me are offensive line, interior defensive line, and cornerbacks, not necessarily in that order, that Goody needs to address this offseason. Did he talk about any of those three at length? Other than I saw he said about the cornerback position, he doesn't believe there's a total overhaul needed.
Yeah, that is exactly. The closest he came to being critical was pointing out that Nate Hobbs was hurt all season. That was the best we got. But yeah, he doesn't. Again, in fairness to Goody, I keep saying this, but like, you don't want to get up there about the guys you have and go, yeah, we don't have enough guys there. They stink. Right? I get it. But again, the other problem with this is these are the holes that exist currently, right? Defensive line, offensive line with the uncertainty there with people leaving. But that's that one, at least there's a chance. I'm not saying they're going to, but you could re-sign some of those guys and then the holes aren't as big on the offensive line. Corner, you know what you have. And defensive line, you know what you have with Kingsley and Igbari hitting free agency. Like, there could be more depending on who you lose in free agency, right? And or the holes could be bigger because of that. You lose Kingsley and Igbari, now defensive end becomes even more of a problem. And then are you going to keep Rashawn Gary on a reduced salary? Is he going to go for that? All those things are factors. But corner, I mean, yeah, Carrington Valentine played well if we weren't grading his tackling, right? That was an area where he obviously had some pretty high-profile mistakes. Bottom line, they're going to have – it's going to be a challenge. He says they can do whatever they need to do in free agency. Okay. Not the way I read the cap and where it's at right now. I know it's gone up to over $300 million, but there's still going to be some challenges. And you're not – you know, you're always going to say, I want to keep all these guys – but keeping all these guys ain't easy to do, and they're not going to be able to do it.
No, you're spot on. So we will see. It's a really big offseason for the guy that didn't tell us a whole lot on Wednesday, and that would be the general manager, Brian Gutekunst.
I'm thankful that he talked.
I am too, but the deep sigh a moment ago is telling on what you got out of it. All right, one more to go in season two of Weekly Wildy. We'll be back with you to maybe recap a little bit of the Super Bowl and preview what's to come this offseason. We'll be taking some of your questions as well, so drop those in the comments below on ESPN Milwaukee's YouTube page. And Jason, before we let you get out of here, who's winning the Super Bowl on Sunday?
Ron Wolf.
So Elliot, I would take that as.
Even if his son doesn't win, he still wins. I mean, John Schneider is the closest replication of Ron Wolf in terms of his approach. He's clearly more Ron Wolf than any of these other, and they've had a lot. The Ron Wolf tree is even better than the Sean McVay tree. It's just older.
I'm glad you said approach and not DNA, because I think Elliott wins by default in that, but nonetheless.
For sure.
That will do it for us this week on Weekly Wildy. Back with you next Thursday. Check out Jason at channel3000.com for all of his musings on the green and gold, as well as the Extra Points newsletter. What?
I don't think they're musings.
Oh, just, come on.
You're a muser. You're a musing. All right. I got to go. Bye.
All right, bye.